I took a look at the toes of my boots and then back to her.
Since when?
Yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
She gestured toward the office at large.
Besides, I've got the rock.
I turned back to the wolf woman. Look, Miss Chichu. She glanced at Vic and then back to me.
Come on, Sheriff. Give a working girl a break. I'll sleep on your sofa.
He doesn't have a sofa.
Kasich glanced up at her.
Really?
About that time, the phone rang at Ruby's desk, and Vic disappeared to answer it.
I've got nowhere else to go.
I sighed.
All right.
But the cots in the holding cells here are really comfortable. I've slept in them more than I have my own bed, of which there's only one, so you're going to be stuck in the recliner my daughter bought me about 5 years ago.
Sounds comfy.
Vic reappeared on the steps.
Those goofballs from Search and Rescue are on the line and say they found something over in the stockyard trail. Do you want to talk to them before you head out to your little bed and breakfast?
Frowning, I headed back up the stairs and passed her at the landing.
Your shower's broken my ass.
Continuing on, I picked up the receiver and grunted.
I'm assuming it's not a body.
No.
What then?
A receipt for gas from over at the Maverick on Route 16. Isn't that the last place you said you saw this Donnie guy?
I nodded, yep.
Well, the receipt is charged to the county, and I remember you saying you had to pay for his gas?
I did.
Then he must have come this way because the prevailing wind is in the opposite direction.
Where are you guys?
Out near the parking lot of the fairgrounds, on the trail beside the creek.
I glanced at the two women and decided I was just as happy to have somewhere else to go.
I'll be there in a couple of minutes.
Any word on the Jeep?
Excuse me?
Can we put a bid in on his Jeep?
We may have to hold off on that for a bit.
I started to hang up, but stopped when I heard him say, because there's blood on the receipt.
Chapter 14.
Looked like blood to us.
I lifted the Ziploc bag and peered at the piece of paper stained with a hole in the middle.
Where exactly did you find it?
He gestured down the trail toward a large sprig of silver sage.
Stuck on that one.
I walked over and knelt down and pulled out my mag light. Shining it about, I couldn't see any other clues.
Impaled on one of the dry branches?
Yeah.
I handed him the bag. Do me a favor and run this over to Isaac Broomfield at the hospital and have him test it, please.
You sure he's there?
He's always there, so get a move on.
What are you going to do?
Standing, I looked around at the dying light.
Have a look around.
As I walked with him toward the parking lot, Kasich cracked open the door of my vehicle.
Something?
It's a receipt from the other night when I met the man who's disappeared.
The father of the boy?
Yep. Look, I'm wanting to take a walk along this trail and search for myself, so you can catch a ride back into town with the search and rescue guys. I'll pay for a motel room and...
I'll wait.
I stared at her.
Honest, I'm fine.
She pulled her dog closer in her lap.
We're as snug as a couple of bugs in a rug.
I nodded. Well, I'm going to take one of the bugs with me.
Circling around, I opened the driver's side door and released the beast from the back.
Come on, you.
Is he a police dog?
I shrugged. He's a dog, and I'm the police, so I guess he's the closest thing we've got.
I started to close the door, but then added, not officially, but his nose is better than mine.
About 40 times better.
She smiled, accenting the broad cheekbones and wide jaw. Too expansive for a typical beauty, but in the long run, devastatingly good-looking, even if she did need a shower.
300 million olfactory receptors in comparison to our 6 million. To put it into perspective, we might notice if a spoonful of sugar has been added to our coffee, whereas canines could detect a teaspoon of sugar in 1 million gallons of water or 2 Olympic-sized pools.
That good, huh?
I closed the door and pulled a stocking cap that I'd taken from Lot's Jeep and held it out to Dog, who took it in his mouth.
I don't think that's what you're supposed to do.
Taking it back, I held it out again and he sniffed at it, and then sat and looked at me. Finally giving up, I stuffed the cap back in my pocket and started for the trail by the creek.
Come on!
The path was well marked and in good shape even after the winter. A lot of the locals walked or ran on it through the year, so looking for specific tracks really didn't make much sense. Taking Dog out of the truck and expecting him to suddenly become a bloodhound didn't make much sense either. But here I was, with the light dying and the cold coming on, standing by a creek with my pal. "So, what do you think?" He wagged. "I bet if we were looking for a ham, you'd find it." As if in response to the insult, he dropped his head and snuffled around, slowly making his way to the left and away from town toward the fairgrounds. Following along behind him, I pulled my maglite and shined it toward the looming grandstands of the rodeo arena, looking pretty unsettling with nobody in the seats. When I glanced back, Dog had moved farther up the trail and had turned to see if I was following, which I was. I had to admit that it was good to be out of doors, even with the drainage apparatus stuck in my side. Still, what did I think I was doing? Maybe avoiding going home with the strange woman? And why hadn't Vic stepped in and done something to help me out? Dog turned again and then quickened his pace. "Hey, don't run off and leave me, okay?" Ignoring me, he continued on, breaking into a soft trot. "Hey!" He disappeared around the next bend, and I shouted again, "Hey!" Hell! Pushing off with a little more urgency, I made the bend in time to see him head toward the back of the grandstands. Damn it! I followed up the slight grade as quickly as I could toward the long backside of the rodeo chutes and the tower leading to the announcer's booth. Darting through the open gates, he continued at a quick pace and I lost him. There was a main gate that I took, allowing me a more direct route to a walkway where the contestants could load into the chutes. Instinctively, I pulled my sidearm and glanced around, finally seeing Dog's hind legs as he shot up the steps. "Dog!" Hustling to the far end, I found another stairway that connected to the one he'd climbed and hauled myself up to a landing overlooking the arena as some snowflakes blew from the grandstand across the open area, swirling devils that danced and then melted away in the breeze. Dog barked. He stood by a closed door that led into the announcer's booth. I hoisted myself up, keeping my colt to the side, figuring there wasn't any sense in scaring the daylights out of a couple of amorous teenagers who might be looking for an exclusive place to neck. Dog turned to look at me but stayed close to the door as I played the beam over the glass, still seeing nothing inside. Stuffing the flashlight under my arm, I turned the knob and opened the door, immediately feeling the heat. Dog darted inside. I traced the beam of the maglite over the room. There was a counter to my right with scattered papers, clipboards, and other refuse from the summer rodeo season. To my left, a table, a few folding chairs, and the loudspeaker equipment in the far corner, but nothing else. Other than Dog snuffling around, the only noise was the rhythmical hum of the baseboard heater underneath the counter attached to the front wall. Kneeling down, I placed a hand over it and felt the warmth. Before I turned it off, I looked around for water lines, a sink, or anything else that might require heat during the winter and the fall and spring hip seasons. Seeing nothing, I reached over, dialed the knob down, and turned the thing off, watching the red light diminish and finally go black. Standing, I turned and leaned on the counter and looked at Dog. "I sure wish you could trade a few of those olfactory receptors for vocal cords and tell me what the hell is going on." When we got back to the lot by the picnic tables, Vic's unit was parked alongside the passenger side of mine. The windows were down, and the two women were talking. My undersheriff leaned out as I approached. "Liam is gone." Walking between the two vehicles, I wrapped an arm around her rearview mirror for support, both physical and psychological. "Gone?" "Jeannie Lott went to pick Liam up at the foster home and he was missing." "Missing? Are you going to keep repeating the last word of my sentences?" I fumbled for some originality. "What happened?" "They put the kid in his room to rest before his mother got there, and when they went to get him, he was gone. The entire group was still over at the house with Sizer Vittoria, but I thought I'd better come and get you since you weren't answering your radio, although Kasich finally did and filled me in." Retreating, I made my way around to the driver's side of my unit. "We'll follow you." Opening the door, I allowed Dog to jump in the back and then climbed in, firing up the V10 and spinning the wheel to catch the rapidly disappearing aged unit ahead of me. "Anything?" "Full lights and siren.
I watched as Vic skidded out onto the paved road and floored it, correcting her drift and jetting into town. The heater was on in the announcer's booth at the rodeo grounds. She shrugged.
Crime of the century?
Making the pavement, I too turned and hit the accelerator. I turned her off to save the county money.
Thrifty.
Bracing her hand against the dash, she reached over and snapped on her seatbelt.
That poor little boy.
Moving right onto the 196 bypass that led south of town, I watched as Vic's brake lights stabbed on and her taillights made a right, stopping just after the lumberyard. She pulled into a driveway that already held another of our units as I slowed and parked at the curb. I climbed out and turned to Kasich.
You stay here.
She saluted as her dog climbed back in her lap.
Okay.
Rushing up the driveway, I noticed a BMW SUV with Colorado plates parked at the curb. I got to the porch, where Dave Anders was waiting.
Walt, we have no idea what happened. I took Liam in the back bedroom because he was falling asleep on the sofa watching TV, and he couldn't have been there for more than 10 minutes before his mother came and I went back to get him, and he was gone.
Have you looked through the entire house?
We were doing that now.
He led the way into the house, where Sally was trying to comfort a woman who sat on the sofa and was crying, and through a short hallway to a guest bedroom where Sancho met us coming up from what I assumed was a basement near the kitchen.
Nobody down there, boss.
Continuing through the house, we ended in the bedroom where Liam had been sleeping, where Vic now stood studying the window. She turned and pointed toward the heavily painted molding.
I haven't touched it, but there's no way that kid got out of this window by himself.
Stepping in closer, I could see where the paint had been scraped as the thing had been forced open by somebody. Turning to Dave, I asked, "Is this window open?" He nodded,
"Kind of. With a lot of force, he can get it partially up."
Glancing back at Sizer Pretoria, I started toward the door. "Continue to go through this house, and if you don't find anything, come out and join us." He was already on his hands and knees looking under the bed as Vic joined me in the hallway. "Circle the vicinity in your unit, and I'll start searching the outside." I stopped and turned back.
"And call the highway patrol."
Pulling out her cell phone, she passed me as I knelt down in front of the crying woman.
"Mrs. Lott?"
She raised her head a bit and sobbed.
"You lost my son."
I studied her face and could see the abrasions and bruises beneath the makeup that Vic had noticed. "We're going to find him, Mrs. Lott. But I have to ask you if you have any idea who might have done this." She caught her breath and screamed in my face,
"You're the one who lost him!"
I studied her for a moment more and then stood, turning towards Sally.
"What was he wearing?"
She seemed confused, but then answered,
"Yellow pajamas, with little cowboys and horses all over them."
"No shoes?"
"No, but there was a blanket on the bed, and that's missing, too."
"What kind of blanket?"
Fleece. Buffalo plaid, red and black."
I walked quickly to the door and called out the description to Vic, who was standing on the sidewalk talking to the highway patrol. I pulled my maglite and continued to the back of the house, working my way around a hedgerow that jutted out from the building. I could see that the window was easily accessible from ground level. Shining the beam under the hedges and then in the tree, I finally stepped toward the window, but could see no prints or any other sign that told me if the boy had been taken through there. Edging in closer, I finally saw an indentation in the wood at the bottom, about the width of a screwdriver or tire iron. Reaching up to the top of the frame, I pushed and watched as the window popped open about an inch, and in the next instant, Sancho was there looking at me, weapon in hand.
"Here?"
"Here." I turned away, looking at the trailer court to my right and the bypass road and highway to my left, watching an 18-wheeler blast down I-25 headed south. Scanning the ground with my flashlight, I still couldn't see any prints, but started thinking about carrying a child wrapped in a blanket with no shoes. How far you could go, and who would it be that the child would let do such a thing without making any noise? Turning back to the window, I pushed it up the rest of the way as Sancho reappeared from the hallway.
"Something?"
"Who was at our offices last?" He thought about it.
"Probably Vic.
After we got the call from search and rescue, she closed up shop, but then got the call on the missing kid."
"Came and got me, and then straight here?"
"Far as I know."
Do me a favor, head back and see if Donnie Lott's Jeep is still in our parking lot. I think he's been hiding out of the rodeo grounds. The heat was on in the announcer's room.
Why there?
He came up here to get his son, and for some reason, I spooked him. But now I'm betting he's got Liam, and if they're in that Jeep, then I'm not sure where they are, but it could be pretty far from here. He dashed into the house, and I played the beam of the flashlight toward the road and the bypass, stepped over a short picket fence, and down the barrow ditch to a pull-off. The ground was hard, and I couldn't see any tracks, until I shone the beam farther back, where a set of tires with an aggressive tread seemed to have pulled over and sat. Not proof positive, but it was a hunch. I walked back to the road and, turning left toward the rear of my truck, thought about it. Why would Donnie go to such lengths to steal his own child? Even if his father-in-law hadn't been in the Casper Hospital, he had every right to the child, so why not just come and take him? Was there something more going on in the family, or were there players I wasn't even aware of? Kasich was still sitting in my truck as I walked by the window, Vic rushing over breathless. Anything? Nothing. Liam must have known his abductor and gone with him willingly.
So you think this guy stole his own kid? But why?
I don't know. But if that Jeep is gone, I'll start knowing a lot more.
Static. Unit 1, this is Unit 3.
Vic slung the handheld to her face.
Stop.
Static.
The Jeep is still here, still parked, still locked.
Tell him thanks for blowing my theory.
She keyed the mic. You blow.
She looked up at me, shorthand. The tarnished gold sharpened like molten metal, and she glanced around.
Now what?
The old-fashioned way, I guess.
Door to door?
For lack of anything else. I gestured toward the radio in her hand. Tell Sancho to stay there for 10 minutes. I'm sending over a visitor. She nodded, and I went back to my truck. Hey, it's looking more and more like I'm not going to make it home tonight. So your options are this truck or our offices. I sleep there all the time, and the shower downstairs has hot water that'll take the first 3 layers of your skin off, honest. She stared at me, the chin held up a little in defiance, before she lowered it and shrugged.
How will I get over there?
You remember the way?
I can use my phone. It's a small town.
Take the truck. I'll hitch a ride with Vic if I need one. Putting the keys from my pocket, I handed them to her, flipped the driver's seat forward to allow Dog to escape into the yard, where he immediately began sniffing. Scooting her own dog to the floor, she climbed over the center console and settled herself in the driver's seat, adjusting it forward.
Geez, Daddy long legs.
She fired up, and I shut the door, stepping back and watching her go.
You do realize you just gave a complete stranger your truck and access to the entire sheriff's department?
Dog sat on my foot and looked up at me as I reached down and ruffled an ear. She seems trustworthy. Vic rolled her eyes.
I'll take the other side of the road.
Watching her head across the street, I called out, I'm going to have a quick chat with Jeannie Lott first.
Fine.
My voice followed after her. Why is it I get this side?
Because that way you get the trailer park.
So you've had absolutely no contact with your husband since he came up here? The woman composed herself, dabbing her eyes with one of the tissues that Sally Anders had provided.
Well, not really. I mean, there were texts that he'd gotten here saying he'd gotten a motel room because it was late.
But nothing after that?
No.
She stood and walked away from me and toward the front window, looking out at the flashing lights that intermittently lit up the neighborhood.
Look, I just want my son back.
We're doing our best. I followed her. How about your father? Anything from him? She continued, looking out the window with her back to me.
No, we don't talk much.
I'm assuming you didn't stop and see him in Casper on your way up?
No. She turned and looked at me. Sheriff, I'm not sure you understand how alienated my family is from one another.
I guess not. But I'm starting to get an idea. Do you mind if I ask what the source of all this animosity might be? She turned and walked to the sofa and leaned back, glancing around at the empty room.
I'd rather not.
I'd rather you did.
I don't think you realize
just how difficult this is for me.
She studied my face for a moment.
Are you charging me with something, because otherwise I don't see it as being any of your business?
Ms. Lott, I've got all my deputies and most of the northern Wyoming law enforcement community out there looking for your husband and child, so I think I'm due something of an explanation as to why they might be missing. Suddenly gripping her hands into fists, she screamed in my face,
"You need to do your job and find my family!"
I waited a moment before answering. "I'm trying, Mr. Lott, but you're not making it any easier for me."
She screamed again, "It's not my responsibility to make it easier for you. Just find my husband and child."
I stood there for a moment longer and then went into the kitchen, where I found the Anderses and dog, who was bumming a piece of bread from Dave. "Walt, I don't know what to say."
"Don't say anything. It's not your fault. If anybody, it's me that should be blamed. I put you in a position that was untenable. I should have known that somebody was looking to abduct Liam, and it's certainly not your fault."
Sally looked up at me with tears in her eyes.
"Thank you."
Squeezing her shoulder, I smiled. "We'll find him." I glanced at Jeannie Lott as I passed through the living room, but she pointedly avoided making eye contact with me, so I continued out the front door with the dog. Who, what, where, and why? I didn't have an answer to any of the W's.
"Walt!"
I looked up to see Vic crossing the street.
"Third door, and we might have caught a break."
She gestured for me to meet and follow as she slowed. "The old guy across the street says he saw a vehicle cruising the neighborhood a couple of times and thought it was weird, so he was going to grab out his license catalog and look it up." She gestured for me to hurry.
"License catalog? What the hell is that all about?"
Hustling as best I could, I caught up with her as dog shot ahead. Back in the day, the fraternal organizations, the Elks, Moose, and Lions clubs, used to sell these little yellow booklets that had the county plates referenced with everybody's name, address, and phone numbers. They used to sell them off the counters at the gas stations.
"You're kidding?"
"Nope.
A booklet for sale that had everybody in the county's plate numbers and personal information?"
"Crazy, huh?"
"Fucking A."
We strode up the driveway to the porch door just as an elderly gentleman appeared thumbing through one such booklet.
"Hello, youngsters."
I didn't know him, but that didn't mean he didn't know me, and I was momentarily charmed by the fact that there were entire cavalcades of people in my community with whom I never had any interaction in an official sense.
"Mister?"
"Kling, Jack Kling."
He reached down and petted the beast.
"I think I've got him. Pretty low number, so I had to keep going back to the front to cross-reference."
Vic folded her arms. "If you give us a number, Mr. Kling, we can have dispatch get us all that information in a few moments." Adjusting his glasses, he peered into the now illegal booklet.
"Oh, but what's the fun in that?"
"Mr. Kling, a boy's whereabouts."
"Here it is. Low number, all right. 24387.
The number sounded familiar. "Ooh." He thumbed through a few more pages as Vic yanked the handheld from her belt.
"Fuck me running through the forest." She clicked the toggle. "Base, I've got a plate number that I need run. It's Absaroka 387.
Static.
"Roger that. Hey, I'm assuming it's okay to let the teacher woman camp out here and have a shower since she's driving the boss's truck?
Whatever, we're here to serve and protect and promote personal hygiene."
Kling pinpointed a page with a fingertip.
"Here it is. Now I've got the address, I can find the name."
"Mr. Kling, if you give us the address, we can have..."
"Just one more second, young man."
He lifted the finger and immediately lost his place.
"Damn!"
Thumbing through a few pages again, he found it and then moved to cross-reference. Vic raised the walkie-talkie to her mouth.
"Base?"
"Static."
"Hold on, I've got a call coming through. How the heck does Ruby deal with all this crap at once?"
Kling smiled and nodded.
"There he is. I thought that was it, but better to be safe than sorry, huh?"
Static. "Hey... you guys aren't going to believe this." Vic keyed the mic.
"What?"
Static.
"Guess who's MIA at the Wyoming Medical Center down in Casper?"
The older gentleman looked up at us, pushing his glasses onto his forehead and smiling even more broadly.
"Aberane et chapare."
"Your reputation is spreading even down in the Casper hospitals. They're referring to an unofficial self-release as a Longmire."
Sazer Vittoria met us at the top of the stairs.
How do you go from medically induced coma to stealing your 65 Travelall back from the impound lot in one of the largest cities in Wyoming and then driving 112 miles to pull your grandson through a window?
Vic reached down and scratched Dog's ear.
In a hospital gown, no less. Man, that's one hellaciously tough old bird.
I shook my head. He must have been pretty desperate.
And how did he find out where Liam was?
My staff looked back at me, blankly, including Dog.
We've notified the HPs.
Vic nodded.
All right. Where would he take him?
She leaned on Ruby's desk.
The ranch?
Sancho shook his head.
The Outlaw Cave. The place has history for his whole family, and it's where he feels safe.
Even after we carried him out of there? He tipped his ball cap back, a dollop of dark hair falling over his forehead.
That's my bet.
Fortunately for us, we've got 3 officers and 3 units. I pointed at Sancho. Call Double Tough and head down to the middle fork, but don't go into the canyon unless you see that Travelall. I turned to Vic. You go to the ranch, and if he's not there, you wait and see if he shows up.
How come I get the ranch?
I smiled. Because you play cribbage.
And where the hell are you going to go?
Up the mountain.
The mountains? Why?
He's got reinforcements up there.
And you're going to go alone?
I've got Dog.
And me?
We all turned to see Kasich coming up the stairs from the basement, roughing her dark hair with one of our towels. She draped the towel over the shoulder of a fresh flannel shirt as Gansu joined her.
I've got nothing to do, so I might as well be good for something.
Miss Chichu, I'm afraid
you sure needed some help the last time I saw you up there.
I shook my head. I can't place a private citizen in danger. She barked a laugh of dismissal.
He's 100 years old, and he almost died of hypothermia.
He's desperate.
Look, I'll stay in the truck with the dogs, okay? I just think you need to have somebody up there with you just in case.
Realizing I wasn't making any headway, and aware that the more time it took us to get moving, the more chance it was that Abe and the boy would be even harder to find, I gave in.
All right, let's get moving. Sancho